This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's ILTA podcast called What Can We Learn from the U.S. Army's KM and Innovation Programs? I'm Amy Monahan, Senior Practice Innovations Manager at Perkins Coie and a volunteer for ILTA. And I'm thrilled today to be joined by Andrew Bragg, Knowledge Management Officer, Headquarters U.S. European Command. I hope I got your title right, Andrew, and welcome.
Thank you. Close enough, for sure.
Okay, so,
before I go on, I just want to make sure that everybody understands I'm speaking for myself based on my experiences and my observations. So I'm not speaking on behalf of the U.S. European Command, but certainly most of my experiences are here. So I can describe, we have a staff of about 2,500 people here at UCOM. And we call it UCOM for short. Sorry if I say that in the future, European Command. And our goal here is to make sure that we provide common understanding and improve decision-making at the command. So how I got here, I think, so a little vignette of how I got here. I was an Army intelligence officer. So we figured out what the adversary was going to be doing. And then we tried to translate that into what we could do to combat that, to overcome that through training exercises, through real world deployments. But what I found on that journey as I grew through that career is that having all the intelligence information you had in the world, it didn't really matter if the guy who was going to be fighting the enemy didn't have it or didn't understand it, and it wasn't in context for him for decision making. So I took on the role sort of as an ambassador from the intel world to the combat arms world. So we call the infantry and the armor and the pilots that do the actual fighting. So when I took this job as a came into this KM program here at UCOM, it was sort of a natural fit. You know, here I was, instead of taking intelligence information, it was more taking everybody's information, whether it was logistics or finance or personnel, and making it available so that decisions could be made. And so when we put it in context, then we can make decisions quicker, we can make them more accurately, and then the staff communication up and down is better. And so that's what I've been trying to focus on here, and that's what I do here in Stuttgart, Germany.
That's really interesting. And thank you for letting us know about sort of like your path to your current role. Can you talk a little bit about how the Army defines and strategically uses knowledge?
Sure. Admittedly, I serve on a joint KM program, which includes Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps. But the Army doctrine is certainly the best. It's the best defined, and it's the best to lean on. So we use that as a starting point. And the Army sees knowledge management as it's the process of enabling knowledge flow to enhance shared understanding, learning, and decision-making. That's kind of a canned definition, if you will. They do that through the alignment of people, processes, and tools. So those are critical parts of that. They take understanding what people do, aligning them in a process, and then amplifying that through tools for the organizational structure and the culture to help with collaboration and interaction between leaders and subordinates. So helping people organize what they do and how they do it is really what KM is about in the Army. Of course, doctrine is one thing and how we actually do it is another thing, but it's a good starting point. You know, really, there's no one size fits all. You have to understand what your organization does and then how to best implement those things across there. So, but the goal is the same. We really want to work smarter and not harder.
And can you talk about some successful either strategies or initiatives that you've been a part of?
Sure. So this program that I inherited when I came here is really, it's a textbook good program, if you will. One of the things we like to do is to take the time to build relationships with all parts of the organization. So we send our team out to work with and aside and along with different elements of the organization. And we build a habitual relationship with those people so that we can understand what is hard for them, what pain points they have, and how it can be fixed. So usually, you know, if you look at a standing operating procedure or some way of doing business, some memorandum, you won't know so much if it will work until you actually do it. So the people that are doing it, we learn from, and we find what those pain points are, and then from there, sort of develop how we will approach a situation. So we really look at it from from three aspects. First, it's the people. You know, are they structured correctly, and how are they doing it? But then it's really the process. And so we focus on process improvement, you know, Six Sigma sort of things that we look at, and how can we first define it? Because often if they don't have a defined process, it's really ad hoc the way they do business. You know, we've just done it, or maybe it's kind of repeatable. You know, we know what we're doing, but we have never really defined it. So we try to line it up so that we can understand what it is from soup to nuts, if possible, and then make sure that's repeatable, because then we can start managing it. So we take somebody who owns that process, as long as they can understand what it is, then it's something we can maintain over time, because really it's the military does quite a bit of transition. Every 3 years, somebody gets transitioned in and out and in and out. And so we have a whole crop of new people that come in, and how do we do business? And if it's not solidified, then we have to start over. And it's, again, pain points again, because it's a whole new organization every 6 or 8 years. There's hardly anybody left after that time. So we have to continue to do that. So we've had many. So, and then again, if it's not just process and a tool can reinforce it, then we'll do that. So for instance, the military is big on accountability. Where are people? Are they at the right place at the right time? But in a staff organization like this, where people have offices and they're not standing out in formation like you see in the movies, then you have you try to wonder where everybody is, but you're still required to know if they've come into work, and you're concerned about your people, that they're not stuck someplace or sick or something. So we realized that the process was hard, because it involved people who are just spread out across the organization. So we helped by building a tool that allowed us, when we logged into our system, it sent a note to this computer program that registered, and then we gave a display, a dashboard, to the people who were responsible for accounting for people. So you could see automatically, as the morning trickled on, who was available, who was not available, who was sick, who was on leave, who was on temporary assignment someplace, or had left the organization. So it was real easy. And then every person, instead of spending 10 or 15 minutes each day working on this accountability, we were able to just get right back to work. So over 2,000 people times 15 minutes, you could do the math. It's a lot every single day that we've saved time by doing that. So then we can think about doing other things better. So those are a couple of examples. And I can keep going on, but maybe there's other things that.
Well, I do want you to keep going on, but I do have a couple of follow-up questions. Okay. So you mentioned that, you know, there's turnover, right? That's just the nature of the organization. Can you talk a little bit about, given the sort of rapid change that's going on in the military, how do you handle staffing and training in a way that it proliferates across the organizations?
Well, that's a great question. So each of the services has their own sort of training pipeline that they come with a basic understanding of what they should be doing, because they're brought into a role, whether they're a logistician or they're a personnel person or an intelligence person. But then there's the UCOM specific thing. So we work very closely with the newcomers orientation sort of program that we have here to make sure that as people come in, they're educated on the tools and the processes that we can. You know, not everybody knows when they first get to an organization what exactly they're going to be doing. So we try to tease them with, here's the way we do this sort of collaboration, or this is the way we organize this information, and this is where you can find these things. And then as they mature into their job and become aware of what it is they're supposed to be doing and good at it, then we have follow-on training for that as well. And we can either do that desk side, or we do it in groups periodically. Every couple of weeks, we offer advanced training. So it's, but it you know, there's always people who are just too busy for that sort of thing. So we have a program where we try to articulate all of the sort of standard operating procedures that people do, and we help people make continuity files. So as someone gets towards the end of their job, they realize, hey, I've put a lot of energy into this. I'd like to be able to capture some of these lessons that I've done. So we instituted a standard, here's what a continuity file could look like. In the old days, when I was in the Army, we used to do these notebooks, and we'd have this binder on the. But the binders aren't really useful anymore, because things are so dynamic, and you can't put a link to here's where you get this. So we have online things that we have on our portal that people can find, and anybody can find all of them. There's nothing secret about any of them. They're just how we do business. And most people aren't that interested if I'm on a different work center. So I don't really watch that so much. So we do that. And then we have an aggregate, a deliberate lesson learned program. So we aid that as well. It's done by a particular office that's dedicated to do that. But we make that available. So anytime someone says, hey, I really learned this by doing this, we have an easy access to be able to articulate that. And it goes into a repository. So the next time that thing occurs, we can go back and review it. So as we look at it, maybe perhaps an exercise or something, we go back and look what we did 2 years ago, because those people aren't here anymore, and it extends beyond. And those, sometimes we have to learn the lessons again and again, or maybe we just identify them again and again, but we try to grow through them. And the longer you can spend doing that, then the better it is for future us's that come through our organization.
So you mentioned that, you know, people, you start with people, right? It's really about developing relationships and engaging with people. I'm curious, how are knowledge management needs and ideas surfaced to you? And then how do you identify which ones to take on? Do you go to the lessons learned repository first? Talk through sort of a little bit your process.
So if I can go back to our, we have what we call knowledge management engineers. They're really business process engineers, and they're out in every directorate across the staff. And we build sort of those ideas of what those demand signals are organically as we're going through the work. So that's one way. And then we come each month, we have a knowledge management working group that we host across the staff. And anybody's welcome to come to that. It's usually staff, like a change agent or two from each of the directorates comes, because they like to hear what innovations are going on and what programs we're working on. And we discuss those things. We try to find a stakeholder for the pain problem. So sometimes they extend beyond just one directorate or one work center. We try to get ownership in that, because if we don't have ownership, then it's really not going to work. It's nothing we do is really going to stick. So we encourage people to own those problems so that we can solve them and work with them throughout. And then we build out the requirement through a number of things. We use a Scrum methodology here, agile process. So we build out what the requirement could be with our product owner, and then we prioritize it both in the KM working group and with my relationships with the chief of staff and the directorate of operations, the director of operations. So taking into consideration what our mission is, what our command priorities are that our commander has given us. Then we sort of rack and stack them, and then we put them into work. So and we execute those in a couple of ways. Obviously, if it's just a process development, or if it's a simple way of doing something on the SharePoint portal, you know, we need an extra place to put something or collaborate, then that's easy. But then we also have a development team, which allows us to build purpose-built tools, or to buy something off the shelf, or use a government-owned software also to help solve the problem, and then integrate it, Once we have built it or integrated it, then we use our change management process. We do some advertising, we do some training, we build the documentation necessary, and then we incorporate it in the training.
You managed to answer all of my follow-up questions after that, in that one question, because I was very interested in sort of like the types of tools that you use in your process around those. So thank you. You read my mind, my follow-up question to that. I'm also really curious. So it sounds like there are dedicated knowledge management staff. So you talked about the knowledge management engineers, and you also have your knowledge management working groups. When you're working on, you know, these different efforts or projects, whatever your nomenclature is, are you also, like, what's your average project team? What does that look like?
Everything is different. There's no average project.
Yeah,
so we set up. Yeah, so we like usually when it's a process, or it's a if I'd say a lighter kind of effort, it's probably about three people and a stakeholder and kind of a supervisor driving it, and then kind of an overall break our workforce into contractors, which work for a company that provides a service to the government, and then we have government people. That work, you know, as a government civilian or a military person. So we have always government oversight on these projects, because since they're employed by the government, they're going to have the authority to say yes or no on projects and to use money to pay for these services. So we kind of have a mix on those things. So we have the contract service that does the sort of the actual process building, and then we have the government that oversees it and helps prioritize it and keep it on track and keep us accountable, keep them accountable to it. So that's a project. But then we have in our development team, we have two smaller teams, one that does full stack developing and one that does more web app with the SharePoint app. But they're versed across the board. So it's usually a two to three person development team when we do that as well. So we get cross-leveled, and it's not just a single point of failure. If someone's on vacation and something happens to the program, we want other people that have worked on it so we don't have to reverse engineer our own work, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. That's super helpful. I'm also curious. So, you know, once your development team has launched a product out, does that then get supported by a different group, or is the same group that is building the product supporting the product? Can you talk a little bit about that aspect?
That's a great question. That the logistics tail that we leave behind us is it always comes to bite us. Particularly when we develop something on an aging or a limited endurance platform. So if we tie it to something that we don't control, then eventually 3, 6, 5, whatever years later, we need an update, and then we have to do the whole thing again. For instance, the SharePoint portal and all the tools that we built on that, we had to migrate, and we delayed migrating, and pretty soon we had to migrate, and that was really painful because we had to redevelop all the things. So yes, our product owner works with the customers and keeps kind of a tally and re-engages with the customers. Is it still meeting your need? Is it still functioning in the way that you desired it to do? And understands, it tries to keep that warm, I guess, if you will. And then we do have to maintain it. And we try to improve it when we do that. So over the course of time, of the life cycle of this product, requests will come in. Hey, it could do this a little bit better. It could do that a little better. And so we package those up. So when the time is ready, those do go into the workflow for what comes up with the next iteration of it, the next version.
You taught me a new term that I'm going to use: logistics tail. That's a great term. Yes.
Bites us every time. It's so hard. We just want to keep moving on, move forward. But it really is, it's responsible to not do that, just to keep tabs on it. And if you have to slow yourself down, then to be able to maintain those things, and it helps to do the proper documentation so that the people in the future, because people move and people change jobs and lose interest or whatever. And so you need the next person to be able to understand what you did. So articulating that, while it's a pain, it's proven in many occasions to be very, very worthwhile.
Super interesting. I'm curious if you have any questions for me.
I am always interested why people look towards the DoD, because it is really a large organization, and people do things very differently. So the way we do things here is very different than they do them in Tampa and in Omaha and Northcom and all these different places. I would love at some point to understand how does an innovation office or your office, how does that fit into your corporate structure, and how do you get support from your organization leads?
Yeah. I mean, it's actually not too dissimilar from what you're describing. So I'm a senior practice innovations manager in a law firm. And what that means for us and how we're approaching it at Perkins is that we engage with our practices and our clients. So we engage with our stakeholders and our customers to almost like internal consultants. And we try to uncover opportunities to leverage process optimization, process design, technology tools, everything that falls into our toolkit to find ways that we can provide improved legal services to our clients. So it's a pretty broad mandate, very similar to yours. And of course, at any given time, we have very specific projects, going on that fall under that strategic direction. And that's why, personally, I'm very interested in hearing about other organizations and sectors and how they strategize knowledge management and innovation work and how that helps inform resources that they deploy. But, we're working towards that common goal of trying to do things better, smarter, faster. So there very a lot of similarities there. And that's why, you know, I think in our while we were preparing for this call, I said there's a bit of a legend, particularly amongst knowledge management folks in the legal industry, that the, you know, the military has it figured out because you're the oldest institution with a lot of knowledge. So you've got it figured out. You've got to have it figured out, right? So that's why we're super happy to be hearing from you, because it's inspiring as one, but also interesting and validating that it sounds like we're all approaching this from a very similar, at least kind of like vision standpoint. So I really appreciate you talking to us about it. And this has been really interesting.
My pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Andrew. And thank you to everyone listening.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.